He said, "We got a thing, leader." Kip already flagged me. Laszlo sipped his champagne. They both watched Kip tossing the basketball in the air. His eyes were on the door to the lobby. He was like a lovelorn schoolgirl. Like Sarah Linton waiting for Will to come home. My heart jumps in my chest every time I hear his key in the door.
"Yo!"
Laszlo snapped his fingers.
"You in there?"
She took his glass and downed the champagne. "What does Kip want?" Laszlo shushed his fingers to his lips and walked away.
"Ma'am?"
A good-looking waiter offered her a tray of champagne glasses. Angie wasn't old enough to be a goddamn ma'am. She snatched a glass off the tray. She walked across the room, picking her way past the Snotleys and Bratleys who made up the 110 sports management team. 5 months ago, she had tapped Dale Harding for a job. He'd been his usual asshole self about it, but Angie knew how to be an asshole, too. She'd told him that she needed money to pay off her dealer. He'd believed her because Dale's life was filled with dealers and bookies who took out interest with their fists. Angie had never had a dealer problem. What she had was a Kip Kilpatrick problem. She needed a way into the agent's inner circle, and Dale was ideally equipped to understand the expertise that Angie could bring to the table. Many of Kip's clients were from the street. They missed the girls they used to have fun with. Angie knew these girls. She understood how their habits were grinding them into the ground. Backing off the pipe, or needle a little, cleaning up a little, and letting a rich basketball player show them a good time was a hell of a lot easier on their bodies than throwing down in the back seat of 20 different cars every single day. And if it put a little money in Angie's pocket, all the better. That had turned out to be the easy part. Kip's inner circle was a harder nut to crack. The agent had kept Angie at arm's length. He had Laszlo. He had Harding. He didn't need some broad busting heads for him. All of that had changed the day Angie ran into the bad end of LaDonna Rippey. The meeting was a fortuitous accident. Angie was sitting across from Kip at the glass table he used as a desk. They were discussing compensation for a girl who'd had it a little rough from one of Kip's players. The negotiation was winding down when LaDonna had slammed open the door. Rippey's wife was an Amazon, the kind of woman who wasn't afraid to pull the loaded gun she kept in her purse. She was mad about something Angie could no longer remember. LaDonna got mad about a lot of things. Angie had suggested a solution. LaDonna had gone away less pissed off, and Kip had asked Angie on the spot if she wanted a more permanent job. Angie didn't want a permanent anything. But she knew that Marcus Rippey had been charged with rape, and she knew that Will was working the other side of the case. Talk about romantic. Sarah could praise him for lifting a stupid bag of dirt, but she couldn't hand him evidence on a silver platter that broke open his case. That had been Angie's initial plan, at least. She had honestly meant to help Will. Then she had seen how much more lucrative it would be to help the case go away. Looking after Will didn't put food on the table. Bribing a few witnesses was nothing she hadn't done before. If Angie hadn't been willing to do it, Harding would have, and if Harding hadn't, then Laszlo would have stepped in. When you looked at it that way, it was Angie's patriotic duty to make sure the job went to a woman. The room started to hush. Marcus Rippey was here. LaDonna was at his side. Her long blonde hair was curled tight, draping over her shoulders. She must have gotten Botoxed this morning. Tiny red dots showed through the almost white powder she used to cover her acne scars. She looked pissed. But that could be from a recent plastic surgery. Or it could just be her general disposition. She had a lot to be angry about. Marcus had been her high school sweetheart. They were married at 18. She was pregnant at 19. By that time, he was already stepping out on her, drawn to the women who were drawn to his fame. Of course, LaDonna had been clueless about the other women. At least, at that point. She started working as a hotel maid when Marcus attended Duke on a full scholarship. Because of strict NCAA eligibility rules, her paycheck was the only thing that had kept the family afloat. There were a lot of ups and downs in those early years, including an almost career-ending injury that had cost him his scholarship and kept him out of his first draft. LaDonna had stood by her man. She had taken on a second job, then a third. Marcus had trained his ass off and come back to what was considered one of the shittiest sophomore seasons in history. He almost got cut from the team, but then something happened. He found his groove. He grew up a little. He'd had another kid by then, and an ailing mother who needed hospice, and a father who wanted to make amends. Marcus Rippey had turned into a superstar. And finally, LaDonna's hard work had paid off. Her victory lap had lasted one season. That's how long it took for Marcus to rise to the top again. The magazine covers and endorsements followed, as did all his other shit. Through it all, LaDonna kept up the Tammy Wynette act, standing by her man. She had stood by Marcus when TMZ posted photos of him with various young actresses. She had stood by him when he was accused of rape, both the time Will knew about and the time he did not. And now she was standing by him as the blonde receptionist hung on his arm like taffy at the fair. Angie put down her glass as she hurried through the crowd. She had her hand around the blonde's waist, her fingernails digging into the skin of the girl's arm before LaDonna could notice. Angie told the girl, "You so much as look at him again, your ass will be on the street. Understood?" The girl understood.
"Excuse me, please." Dietmar Wittich tapped his pinky ring on the side of his champagne glass.
He looked around the room, waiting for silence. It came quickly. The lawyer had gotten Marcus Rippey off a serious rape charge. His firm had put together the all-star deal. He made more money than could ever be put on the LED sign. And through the kindness of the Lord Jesus, he was going to let the assembled people share in the making of even more wealth.
He said, "I would like to propose a toast, please."
Everyone raised their glasses. Angie crossed her arms.
"First, I must say that we are very pleased that Marcus's problems have been dealt with."
He smiled at Marcus. Marcus smiled back. LaDonna looked at Angie and rolled her eyes.
"But today is a celebration of our new collaboration between 110, our international partners, and some of the greatest athletes the world has ever known."
He kept talking, but Angie wasn't interested. She glanced around the room. Harding was drinking champagne because he wasn't yellow enough already. Laszlo was slinking in the corner. Kip was playing with his ball. Two more of the bigger stars had arrived. They stood in the back, towering over the mortals in the room, their gorgeous wives at their sides. That was when Angie saw them. Reuben and Joe Figueroa. Fig was not the biggest star, but he was the only one that Angie was interested in. At 6'8", he was easy to pick out of the crowd. His wife was harder to find, mostly because she worked to stay in the shadows. Joe was petite compared to most of the players' wives. She was built like a ballerina. Not Misty Copeland, but the old-school ballerinas, who were such wispy waifs that they could turn sideways and disappear. That was obviously what Joe was trying to do now. She stood beside her husband, not touching him, her body turned at an angle as she looked down at the floor. Angie took the rare opportunity to study the girl. Her curly brown hair, her perfect features, her graceful neck and elegant shoulders. She had poise. That was what made you notice her. Joe was trying to disappear, but she didn't understand that she was the sort of woman you couldn't take your eyes off of.
"Jesus, Pulaski."
Harding elbowed Angie in the ribs.
"Why don't you ask for a number?"
Angie felt her cheeks go hot.
"Sick bitch."
He elbowed her again.
"She's a little younger than your usual."
"Fuck off." Angie stalked across the room to get away from him. She could still hear him chuckling his old pervert laugh, even with 50 people between them. She leaned against the wall. She watched Dietmar finish his toast. He did that German thing where he had to look everybody in the eye. He did it with Marcus. He did it with LaDonna. He did it with Ruben Figueroa. He could not do it with Joe. She was staring down into her champagne flute, not drinking. Her hand was at her neck, fingers playing with a simple gold chain. There was something tragic about her beauty that broke Angie's heart. Maybe Del Harding wanted to fuck his daughter. Angie just wanted to make sure that hers was okay. Monday, 8 p.m. Angie sat alone on the giant couch in Kip's office. The lights were off. The party upstairs was winding down as people headed off to dinner. Her shoes were on the floor, a glass of scotch was in her hand. She could hear the steady hum of traffic snaking down Peachtree. Monday night. People still wanted to go out. There were clubs, shopping malls, restaurants. The rich and famous looking to see and be seen. 110 Sports Management was located in the center of Buckhead. Half a mile north, you could find one of the most expensive zip codes in the country. Sprawling mansions with guest houses and Olympic-sized swimming pools. Private security, heavy iron gates. Megastar athletes, rap stars, music people. Drug lords living beside hedge fund managers and cardiologists. Since the 70s, Atlanta had been a mecca for middle-class African Americans. Doctors and lawyers from the historically black colleges graduated and decided to stick around. A lot of professional athletes from other towns kept homes in the city. They wanted their kids to go to private schools that understood that the only color that mattered was green. That was the great thing about Atlanta. You could do anything you wanted, so long as you had the money. Angie had a lot of money now, at least relative to what she usually kept in her bank account. There were the checks she got from Kip every 2 weeks, and the pocket change she made off the girls. None of it made her happy. For as long as she could remember, Angie had only ever looked at the future. Nothing could be done about the past, and more often than not, the present was too shitty to contemplate. Trapped with her mother's pimp? Temporary. Shuttled to another foster home, just for now. Living in the back of her car? Not for long. Time is what kept her moving forward. Next week, next month, next year. All she had to do was keep running. Keep looking ahead, and eventually, she'd turn that corner. Only now that she'd turned the corner, she found that there was nothing there. What did normal women want that Angie didn't already have? A home, a husband, a daughter. Like everything else, she already had a daughter that she had thrown away. Josephine Figueroa was 27 years old. Like Angie, she could pass for white, or black, or Latina, or even Middle Eastern if she wanted to freak people out on an airplane. She was thin. Too thin, but maybe that came with the territory. The other wives on the team were always cleansing or dieting or going to spinning classes or plastic surgeons to get things sucked and filled and pinned back up so they could compete with the groupies who swarmed their husbands. They need not have bothered. Their husbands were not attracted to the groupies because they were hotter than their wives. They were attracted to them because they were groupies. It was a hell of a lot more fun to be with somebody who thought you were perfect than it was to be with a woman who wouldn't put up with your shit. Angie didn't know what kind of wife Joe was. Only twice had she been in the same room with her daughter, both times at the 110 offices, both times from a distance, because both times Reuben had been there. He towered over his wife, radiating a quiet confidence. Joe seemed to like this. She leaned into his shadow. She kept her eyes down, demure, almost transparent. The best word that came to mind was obedient, which pissed Angie off because this girl had her blood and that blood had never taken orders from anybody. Kate. That's what Angie had thought she would call her daughter. Like Katharine Hepburn. Like a woman who knew how to hold herself. like a woman who took what she wanted. What did Joe want? Judging by her demeanor, it seemed like she wished for nothing more than what she already had. A rich husband, a child, an easy life. The painful truth was that Joe was ordinary. She had attended a small high school outside of Griffin, Georgia. She had been smart enough to get into the University of Georgia, but not smart enough to graduate. Angie wanted to believe Joe had dropped out because she was a free spirit, but the math didn't support it. She had left school for a man. 8 years ago, she had married Ruben Figueroa. He was 2 years her senior and already in the NBA. His reputation was that of a laser-focused player. Off the court, he was often described as reserved, cerebral. He wasn't into flash. He was about doing the job right and going home to his family. Apparently, this is what Joe wanted. She'd followed him to Los Angeles and to Chicago, and now she had returned with him back to her home state. They had one kid, a boy, 6 years old, named Anthony. This was where the publicly accessible information on Joe Figueroa ended. Despite her age, Joe wasn't on social media. She wasn't a joiner. There were no groups with which she was involved. She didn't go to parties unless they were for her husband's work. She didn't meld with the wives. She didn't lunch. She didn't wander around the mall or hang out at the gym. The only way Angie was able to track her at all was through her husband. 1 year ago, a Google alert had popped up in Angie's feed. Ruben Fig Figueroa was joining the Atlanta team. According to the article, the move was lateral, the kind of thing that could prolong Ruben's career for another few years. How had Angie felt when she read the news? Annoyed, at first. She didn't want the temptation. Only a raving bitch would show up in Joe's life 27 years after ditching her. Which is why Angie had vowed to leave it alone. No good would come out of trying to insert herself into her daughter's peaceful world. But then, there was a second Google alert. The Figueroas had moved to Buckhead. And a third. Ruben Figueroa signs with 110 Sports Management. That was when Angie had finagled a job through Dale Harding, promising him some favors, because she knew that favors were the one thing Dale needed. Why? Angie wasn't one for introspection. Reaction was more her thing. And curiosity. She had been tracking Joe off and on for almost 20 years. Background checks, internet searches, and even a couple of private detectives. At first, Angie had wanted to know who had adopted her daughter. That was a natural curiosity. Who wouldn't want to know? But like everything else in Angie's life, it wasn't enough. She had to make sure Joe's parents were good people. Then she had to know more about Joe's husband. Then she wanted to know who Joe's friends were, how she spent her time, what she did with all the hours in her day. Greedy. That was a better word. Angie did all of this because she was greedy. It was the same reason she couldn't take just one pill, one drink, one man. She wasn't going to blow up Joe's life. That was a promise. For now, for today, all that Angie wanted was to hear her daughter's voice. She wanted to see if the tenor was the same. If Joe shared Angie's dark sense of humor. If she was happy like she should be because she had dodged the biggest bullet of her life the day that Angie had bolted out of her hospital bed. Twice in the same room. Twice, Joe stood silently by her husband. The girl didn't look at Ruben Figueroa much, and that bothered Angie. After 8 years of marriage, there shouldn't be googly eyes, but something was off there. Angie felt it in her gut. She hadn't worked for Kip long, but you didn't need a PowerPoint presentation to understand the athletes' wives. All they had was what their husbands did with a basketball. LaDonna always crowed the day after Marcus did something extraordinary on the court. Likewise, she was hell on wheels if Marcus missed an important shot. Not so much with Joe and Ruben. The more attention the husband got, the the more it seemed like Joe wanted to disappear. And the weird thing was, Reuben Figueroa was getting a lot of attention. Angie didn't understand the terminology, but apparently Reuben's team position wasn't about the glory, more of a grinder than a breakout player. Somehow, he had managed to make himself indispensable on the court, the guy who was willing to take a foul or knock some heads or whatever it took to make sure Marcus Rippey scored the basket. Everybody won when Marcus Rippey scored a basket. Reuben was the puzzle that Angie needed to figure out. There weren't many pieces to put together. Unusually, he didn't seek attention. He didn't go to clubs or restaurant openings. He actively avoided the press. Interviewers always attributed his shy reserve to a childhood stutter. His background was as innocuous as Joe's. Small-town high school in Missouri, full ride to Kentucky, late-round draft pick to the NBA, middling career until he got dusted with the Rippey magic. None of this afforded great insight. The only thing that made Reuben stick out was that he was white in a sport dominated by black men. It did Angie no good to know that Joe had married a man who looked like her father. Angie put her glass on the table. She stared out the window at the dark sky. 10 basketballs were lined up on the ledge. Championship balls, she guessed, but Angie gave not one shit about sports of any kind. The whole concept of men chasing a little ball back and forth bored her to tears. She didn't particularly find the players attractive. If she wanted to fuck a tall, lanky man with perfect abs, she could go home to her husband. At least, she'd always thought she could. Will had waited for her. That was his thing. Angie would go away. She would have a little fun. Then a little more fun. Then a little too much fun, which would necessitate her going back to Will so that she could recharge. Or hide out. Or whatever she needed to do in order to reset herself. That was what Will was for. He was her safe harbor. She had never anticipated that a fucking red-headed dinghy would drop anchor in her calm waters. Angie got it. She saw the attraction. Sarah was a good girl. She was smart, if being smart that way mattered. She was corn-raised, from a good family. If a woman like that loved you, then it meant that you were normal, too. Angie could see where Will would be drawn to Sarah's wholesomeness. He had always been such a freakish goody-two-shoes, volunteering to help Mrs. Flanagan at the home, cutting the neighbor's grass. He wanted to do well in school. He studied his ass off. He always tried for the extra credit. Except for being retarded, he probably would have been a star student. "It breaks my heart that he's so ashamed of his dyslexia," Sarah had told Tessa. "The irony is that he's one of the smartest men I have ever known." Angie wondered if Will knew Sarah was talking to her sister about his secret. He would not be happy. He was ashamed for a damn good reason. The overhead lights flickered. Angie looked up at the ceiling. She watched the fluorescent bulb spark to life. Harding ambled over to the drink fridge and took out a bottle of Bankshot. He plopped down on the opposite end of the couch. His eyes were more yellow than white. His skin was the texture and color of a dryer sheet. "Jesus," Angie said. "How much longer do you have?"
"Too long."
He grabbed her scotch. She watched him top off the glass with a radioactive-looking energy drink. She said,
"That stuff will kill you." "Here's hoping."
They both heard a basketball bouncing against marble tile. They both scowled.
"Where's Laszlo?" Kip asked.
"Here."
Laszlo was right behind him. He had a sour look on his face. Angie had tapped a favor for a peek at the guy's sheet. Laszlo Zivkovic was small, compact, but he was good with a knife and he had no hesitations about using it. He'd done a stint in jail for slicing up a girl's face, but the heavy time had come from a knife fight outside a bar. Somebody had ended up at the hospital. Somebody had ended up at the morgue.
and now Laszlo was in Atlanta with his knife.
All right, gentlemen. Kip held the basketball under his arm. He retrieved a black folder from his desk. We've got a problem.
Dale leaned over and helped himself to the bowl of peanuts.
Rippy rape another squealer?
Kip looked irritated, but he didn't rise to the bait.
I don't know if y'all noticed tonight, but LaDonna was more pissed off than usual.
Laszlo groaned. He sat down in the chair opposite Angie.
What's wound her up this time?
Angie guessed. Her husband cheating on her?
Harding said, You get the bank, you take the spank.
Everyone but Angie laughed. They never got it, these guys. They thought that the wives only wanted money. She asked Harding,
Would you fuck Marcus Rippey for LaDonna's checkbook? Ain't that Kip's job?
Shut up, asshole.
Kip was so far in the closet, he practically lived in Narnia.
Remember where we are.
Harding nodded.
All right, I get it.
They all got it. 110's athletes were jet-setting multimillionaires, but they were also small-town boys whose mamas had dragged them to church every Sunday. Their religion skipped over serial adultery and smoking weed and stopped dead at two guys doing each other.
Laszlo said, What's she up to?
He meant LaDonna. He was trying to steer things back on track.
She find out about the girl?
What girl?
Harding was paying attention now. Marcus has a little play in Vegas. That's not it. Kip tossed the black file folder onto the couch beside Angie. She didn't pick it up.
Kip said, It's Joe Figueroa.
Angie's heart did a weird shake. She had never heard anyone say Joe's name aloud before. It had a kind of music to it.
Kip said, Pulaski?
She worked to keep her expression neutral as she picked up the folder. The first page had a photograph of Joe. Her hair was shorter. She was holding a small boy in her arms. She was smiling. Angie had never seen her daughter smile before.
Harding brushed peanut dust off his tie. She popping pills again?
She's an addict? Angie felt a razor blade pump through her heart. How long?
Got pulled over in high school for a DWI. They found a stack of scripts in her glove compartment. Valium, Percocet, Codeine.
Angie thumbed through Joe's background check. She found a juvenile arrest record. There was no mention of illegal prescriptions.
Harding explained, Her dad had some rhythm with the local force. He got it bumped. She did some community service. Everybody got paid.
How do you know?
Talk to the A.O.
The arresting officer. Angie checked the address on the report. Thomaston. A small-town cop would be able to hide evidence, but it would take more than one payout.
Whatever. Drugs aren't her problem.
Kip had traded his basketball for a bank shot. He twisted off the cap and tossed it into the trash can.
It's Marcus.
Marcus? Angie looked up from the file. She tried to keep her tone conversational, but the thought of Marcus Rippey sniffing around her daughter made her want to rip his face off.
What's he got to do with her?
They grew up together. He's the reason she met her husband.
Kip said this as if everyone already knew.
Christ, Pulaski, don't you ever read anything?
Not if it has to do with sports.
Harding explained. Rippey grew up in Griffin. He and Joe had some kind of summer lovin' bullshit at junior Bible camp. Fast forward to his senior year, he was being heavily scouted. Some team sent players down to woo him. Informal stuff, nothing that wouldn't pass inspection. That's when Joe got her head turned.
Angie said, Ruben Figueroa was one of the players who was sent to woo Marcus. She had always wondered how Joe had met her future husband. Now she understood. And she also understood that Harding knew a hell of a lot more about her daughter than she did. It made sense. Kip would have wanted Joe seriously vetted before he took on Ruben Figueroa as a client. Wives and girlfriends were always the weakest points. She asked, Have you asked Marcus if anything is going on between him and Joe?
There was collective guffawing. No one questioned Marcus Rippey.
110 took a paternal relationship with all of their athletes, with the understanding that at any time, their bratty kids could take their toys and leave. Angie said,
"Let me wrap my head around this. Junior high, Marcus and Joe are sweet on each other. Summer's over, they break up. A few years later, LaDonna hooks up with Marcus. She would have known about his previous girlfriends. I don't see her not getting a full history, even as a teenager."
She asked, "Why is it a problem now?"
"Because Joe is here right under her nose," Laszlo answered. "LaDee seemed okay with it at first, brought Joe into the group, threw a party for her, took her to lunch, but lately she's been giving Joe the hairy eyeball."
Angie knew that this would not turn out well for Joe. LaDonna was stone-cold crazy when it came to her husband. Office lore had it that she had taken a shot at a cheerleader who had gotten too close to Marcus at a party.
"What about Reuben? Is he suspicious?"
"Who the hell knows? The guy is a sphinx. He's probably said 10 words to me the whole time I've known him. None of them 'good job' or 'thank you,' by the way."
Kip chugged the rest of his energy drink. His throat worked like a goose being fattened up for pâté. Angie didn't know which was worse, watching him play with his ball or listening to him gurgle cherry-lime bank shot. 90% of his day was spent doing one or the other. By quitting time, his upper lip was like the red on a beach ball.
"Hey," Harding tapped Angie's shoulder. "Nobody calls him Reuben. It's Fig. Didn't you read his bio?"
"Why would I read his bio?"
Kip belched. "Because he's Marcus's go-to guy, because he brings in millions of dollars to the firm, because, once his knee gets straightened out, he has the potential to bring in even more."
Harding asked,
"What's wrong with his knee?"
Kip side-eyed Laszlo.
"Nothing's wrong with his knee."
Angie closed the file.
"Okay, what's the problem we're all here to solve?"
"The problem is that Marcus is getting close to Joe again, and LaDonna doesn't like it. And when LaDonna isn't happy, ain't none of us happy."
Angie couldn't see it. Reuben struck her as possessive, and Joe seemed to like that just fine.
"What makes you think they're getting close?"
"Because I've got eyes in my head."
Kip opened another bank shot. The bright red liquid spilled onto the floor.
"You can feel it when they're together. Where were you tonight?"
"Not trying to feel things between two adult people."
"I saw it too."
Laszlo started pacing. He was taking this seriously.
"Marcus touched her elbow when he gave her a drink, intimate-like."
Harding asked,
"We looking at a Tiger Woods situation?"
Angie asked, "What does that mean?"
Kip said, "Tell me you know Tiger Woods is a golfer."
"Yes, I know who he is,"
Angie said, though she had no idea how.
Laszlo explained, "Tiger was at the top of his game, then his family life fell apart, and now he's hit rock bottom. Can't even swing a club anymore."
"Why did his family life fall apart?"
"Doesn't matter," Kip said. "What matters is that Marcus is the same way. If things are bad at home, they're bad on the court. His game is tied to LaDonna."
Angie still couldn't see it. LaDonna was as erratic as a ping-pong ball, but Marcus was having his best season yet.
"How so?"
Kip said, "Anytime she mentions divorce, you can count on at least 5 points being shaved from the board. More if she calls a lawyer."
Angie wanted to laugh, but they were obviously dead serious.
5 points.
Harding was nodding his head, probably planning how he was going to exploit this information with his bookie.
"Marcus can't play without her."
Angie asked, "Does LaDonna know she's got this power?"
"What the hell do you think?" Kit flashed Laszlo an incredulous look. "Does LaDonna know?"
He grabbed the basketball.
"She uses it like a goddamn guillotine over our heads."
Harding put down the empty peanut bowl. He clapped his hands clean.
"You want us to plant some oxy on Fig's wife, call the cops, stick her in the pokey for the night?"
Angie's heart banged into her throat.
"That sounds extreme."
Harding didn't seem to think so.
"Why use a hammer when you can use an axe?"
She struggled to come up with reasons not to.
"Because Reuben
Fig, is married to this woman. Because she's got a kid. His kid. Because she might not be screwing Marcus. Everybody's screwing Marcus. Kip said this like it was gospel. Look. Angie leaned up on the couch. She talked to Kip because this was his decision. You told me to handle LaDonna. But handling LaDonna means handling all the wives. She opened the folder as if she needed to remind herself of something, but the truth was, she was grasping at straws. The way you keep the wives happy is you don't cause waves. Sending... She pretended to look for the girl's name. Josephine to rehab is a big wave. It's a media thing. It'll get her a lot of attention. There will be interviews and paparazzi. You know what happens when cameras are around. The wives go nuts trying to put themselves in the picture. And then there's the question of whether or not Joe is even using drugs. She looked at Harding for the answer. He shrugged. She said, "Walk it out. You plant the drugs. You call the cops. She gets in front of a judge who puts her in rehab. What happens when they figure out she's not using? Blood tests will show she's clean. She won't go through withdrawal. What if that's the story she tells, that she was framed?" "Is there a race angle?" Laszlo asked. "I can't tell what she is, black, white, Latina." "She's beautiful," Kip said. "That's all that matters. Nobody gives a shit when an ugly bitch complains." Harding suggested. "Joe's mother." Kip asked. "What about her?" "She was moved up here after the father died, got some kind of heart condition, so they wanted her to be near a good hospital. The mother's on Fig's dime." "Easy," Laszlo said. "We threaten Joe with the mother. Tell her Mommy is going to end up eating cat food if she doesn't cut it out with Marcus."
Angie spitballed. If Joe's got a line on Marcus, the mother could be looking at an even bigger jackpot. He's got a hell of a lot more money than Reuben does. He could put the mother up in a penthouse on top of the Ritz, buy her a new heart, whatever she wants.
Harding said, "She's not wrong."
Angie shot him a look. He hadn't said she was right, either. Kip said, "Okay, what's the solution, assholes?" Angie rushed to answer before anybody else could. "I'll shadow Joe and see what comes up." She thought about something else. If she's not screwing Marcus, then what's going on between the two of them? Kip bounced the ball. What else could she want from him if she's not looking to move up the food chain? Could be she's slipping him pills. Could be she's blackmailing him about something from his past. Could be a lot of things. Angie had to stop to swallow. She couldn't let this get away from her. "We can't find a solution without knowing what the problem really is." Harding said,
"I'm leaning back toward my idea. Joe's the problem. Joe goes away. The problem goes away."
Angie tried. What if Joe isn't the only one who's the problem? What if she's talking to somebody? What if she's working with somebody? Harding shrugged, but she could see his mind was swinging back around.
"Don't be stupid about this."
Angie stood up. She knew that Kip responded best to aggression.
"I'll find out what's going on. All I need is time."
"Time is exactly what we don't have," Kip countered. "Training is ramping up. We've got the All-Star groundbreaking in 2 weeks. I had to cut off my own right nut and hand it to Dittmar to keep Marcus in. This has to be taken care of fast." They all went silent again. Angie stacked the pages in the folder. She had to get out of here before Harding swung back the other way. "Let me dig a little deeper before we bring down the axe." Kip said,
"You've got 2 days."
"It'll take that long just to catch myself up to speed." Angie listed the things she had already done. "I'll need to follow her around, check her digital footprint, scope out where she spends her time.
Clone her phone, read her texts, pull the emails off her computer."
Harding winked at Angie. He was finally on board.
"She's right, Kip. I can get my electronics guy on this pronto, but to drill down what's the what will take at least 2 weeks."
"We don't have that kind of time." Kip tossed the ball in the air.
You've got 1 week, Pulaski. You know how this works. Either the problem goes away or the wife does.
Tuesday, 7:35 a.m.
You'll have to move along, an insistent woman in Lululemon warned Angie. She had a fluorescent baton in one hand and a plastic cup of green slush in the other. This is the drop-off lane.
Angie looked up at the elementary school. She had parked at the curb. There was no sign indicating this was the drop-off lane.
The woman repeated, "Move along, please." A car horn beeped behind Angie. She checked the mirror. Black Mercedes SUV. The boxy six bills kind. Just the thing every mother needed to take her kid to school.
Habla inglés?
Angie swallowed the knives that wanted to shoot from her mouth. Just because she was in a shitty car with a leaking transmission didn't mean she was the fucking maid.
Habla fuck off, she muttered,
jerking the car away from the curb. The coffee cup between her legs sloshed onto her jeans. Damn it. Angie jerked the wheel again, turning out of the school parking lot. She took an illegal left. More car horns blared. She was doing a fantastic job staying undercover. Peachtree Battle Avenue split in two, a grassy divide separating the north and south lanes. Angie couldn't figure out how to turn back around. She drove over the grass, then parked in the wide mouth of a brick-paved driveway that led to a mansion. Not exactly the best place to hide in plain sight, but better than her vantage point yesterday, which put her too far down from the school to watch Joe drop off her kid. Kip was getting impatient. Two nights ago, he had given Angie a week to figure out what Joe was up to. After a full day of surveillance with no revelations, he was making noises about Dale taking over. There was no way in hell that Angie would let Dale take over. She studied the line of traffic on the other side of the street. More black SUVs, some BMWs, and the occasional Lexus. E. Rivers Elementary was the Taj Mahal compared to the public school shitholes Angie had attended. The kids were so shiny white that they practically glowed. Angie had been to the school many times before, but never this early. Usually she parked in the strip mall across the main road and stood on the sidewalk watching the kids on the fenced-in playground. She had wanted to check out Joe's kid. She knew who to look for because there were tons of photos on Ruben Figueroa's Facebook page. Joe wasn't in any of them, but that wasn't why Angie was unhappy about the pictures. No matter how studiously Ruben avoided fame, he was still a public figure. He shouldn't be showing everybody his kid's face. There were nuts out there. Any one of them could figure out where the boy went to school, what time he would be on the playground, just like Angie had. This was her grandkid, she guessed. Technically, not for real. Angie sure as hell wasn't old enough to be a grandmother, especially to a kid like Anthony Figueroa. The name was cumbersome for a six-year-old, but it seemed to fit. Anthony was like a little adult. His brow was permanently furrowed, shoulders rounded, head down, as if he wanted to fold into himself. Instead of playing with the other kids at recess, he sat with his back to the wall of the school and stared mournfully out at the playground. He reminded Angie of Will. The lonely aura, the longing mixed with the thing that always held him back. Will was great at sports, but there was no parent to drive him to games or pay for his equipment. There was also the matter of the roadmap of scars on his body. If Will changed out in the locker room, someone would notice the obvious signs of abuse, and then a teacher would become involved, and the principal and social workers, and suddenly he would be put under a magnifying glass, which was the thing that Will hated the most. Anthony Figueroa clearly shared this same aversion to attention. Then again, so did his mother. Angie saw Joe's charcoal gray Range Rover inch along the drop-off lane. The same scene played out that Angie had witnessed the day before. Joe didn't wave to the other mothers in the carpool. She didn't speak to the Nazi with the sign who'd shooed Angie away. She made like Anthony. She kept her head down. She stayed in her lane. She dropped off her kid. She drove away. Going by yesterday, or
Any other day that Angie had watched her daughter, Joe would go home, and she wouldn't go back out again until it was time to pick up Anthony. Unless it was Thursday or Friday, the days she went to the grocery store and the dry cleaner, respectively. Angie had pictured a lot of things for her daughter, but never that she would turn into a hermit. Angie's car was pointed in the wrong direction to follow Joe. Another trip through the grassy divide landed her two cars behind the Range Rover, which was stopped at a red light. Joe's blinker wasn't on, which could mean that she was heading straight into the Peachtree Battle shopping center. Angie scanned the shops down the hill. This wasn't Joe's grocery day, and even if it was, she used the Kroger on Peachtree. Her dry cleaner was on Carriage Drive. The only business in the strip mall that was open this early was Starbucks. The light changed. Joe drove across the intersection and turned into the Starbucks parking lot. Angie followed at a distance, keeping another car between them. The lot was packed. Angie expected Joe to pull into the line at the drive-thru, but she circled a few times and found a spot.
Come on.
Angie had to wait out a shuffling woman with her nose in her phone before she could exit the parking lot and find a space in front of the bank across the alley. She got out of her car and darted toward the Starbucks. She didn't realize what was about to happen until she saw Joe opening the glass door. She was going into a coffee shop. She would place her order at the counter. She would thank the woman behind the register. There would have to be some kind of conversation. Angie would finally hear Joe's voice. This was why she had wanted the job at Kipp's in the first place. This moment. This space and time. She would hear her daughter speak. She would divine through some long-snuffed maternal instinct whether or not Joe was okay. And then Angie could get back to her regular life and never think about her lost daughter ever again. Angie opened the door. She was too late. Joe had already placed her order. She was standing with the herd of coffee buyers, waiting for the woman behind the counter to call her name. Angie mumbled a curse as she got in line for the register. The guy ahead of her had apparently never been to a Starbucks before. He was asking questions about sizes. Angie pulled a bottle of overpriced apple juice from the fridge. She glanced at Joe, then let herself stare openly. She wasn't the only person appraising her daughter. Every man in the room had noticed her. Joe was beautiful. She had a way of drawing your eye. What was troubling was that she either didn't notice or didn't care. At 27, Angie had used her looks like a battering ram. There wasn't a door she couldn't break open.
"Josephine?" the barista called. "Tall soy latte."
Josephine. Not Joe. She picked up the cup. She didn't speak. Her smile was stressed, obviously forced. She took the latte to the back of the store. She sat down at the long bar overlooking the parking lot. There was an empty stool one seat down. Angie checked to make sure the cashier wasn't looking. She ducked out of line and took the empty seat before anyone else could. The bar was narrow, maybe a foot wide. Outside the window, cars snaked around the drive-thru window. The guy between Angie and her daughter was typing on his computer. She glanced down at the screen and assumed he was writing the great American novel. At a Starbucks, just like Hemingway. Angie opened her juice. She had done private eye work off and on for years. There was a go-bag in her trunk with the tools of the trade, duct tape, a small tarp in case it rained, a good camera, a directional microphone. Four tiny cameras that could be hidden inside potted plants and air vents. None of which could help her at this late date. She spotted a newspaper a few seats down. She bumped the woman on the other side of her, nodded at the paper, and it was silently passed her way. Hemingway meets Sam Spade. Angie skimmed the headline on the front page. She chanced another look at her daughter. The cup caught her attention. Josephine was written in black marker. Angie knew there was a lot in a name. Her mother's pimp had called her Angela. Even now,
If anyone said the name, bile would shoot into her mouth.
Angie took a deep breath. She let her eyes travel up. Joe was staring out the window.
Angie followed her sightline to the white, stucco wall of the strip mall.
The girl was waiting for something, thinking about something, upset about something. Her eyes did not move from the wall. She was sitting on her hands. Steam rose from her untouched coffee. Her phone was face up on the bar in front of her. She was tense. Angie felt like she could reach across Hemingway and actually touch the woman's anxiety. But that wasn't what she was here for. Angie opened the newspaper. She pretended to be interested in world events, and then she actually got interested in world events, because nothing else was happening. The woman next to her got up and left. The line at the counter thinned, then disappeared. The parking lot began to empty. Finally, Hemingway moved to an oversized chair a few tables away. Angie turned the page in her newspaper. Finance. She glanced at Joe. Her daughter had not moved. She was still sitting on her hands, still staring at the blank wall, still almost shaking with anxiety. There were only two people left at the bar. Angie got up and moved a few stools away because that's what a normal person would do. She spread out the newspaper. She wasn't Meryl Streep. She couldn't pretend to be interested in finance. She turned to the life section. She reached for her juice, but so much time had passed that the bottle was warm. Angie's eyes started to blur from reading the tiny words. She looked out the window and blinked. She watched a car pull into the street. She listened to Hemingway banging away at his laptop. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw Joe jump. The move was almost imperceptible. A half second later, Angie heard Joe's phone ring. Not a ring, exactly. More like a noise you'd hear from a 1950s sci-fi movie. FaceTime. Joe's hands were shaking when she accepted the video call. She held the phone low in front of her face. Angie couldn't see the image of the caller, nor could she hear that person's voice. Joe had slipped in earbuds. She held the tiny mic up to her mouth and said, "I'm here." Angie pulled her own phone out of her purse. She tapped some buttons. She pretended to toss the phone back into her purse, but the move was practiced. The phone landed at an angle, camera facing toward Joe. Angie couldn't look at what was happening live, but she could watch the video later. "Yes," Joe said. "Do you see?" Angie's vision tunneled on the newsprint. She felt a pain in her ear. She was straining to hear Joe's voice, but it was little more than a whisper. Joe said, "Yes, I understand." Angie flipped the paper over. She ran her finger down a line of text that she could not read. Joe's voice was still low, but she sounded panicked, afraid. "I understand." Who could make Joe sound scared? Marcus Rippey came to mind. He liked being in charge. Joe was his type. So was Angie. But even at 27, Angie could handle guys like that. She didn't think little Josephine from Thomaston could handle anything. "I will," Joe said. "Thank you." There was a change in the air, stress draining away. The call had ended. Joe put down the phone. Her elbows went to the bar. Her head dropped into her hands. Relief radiated off her thin body. Her voice. Angie had been too wrapped up in the whispery hush to analyze the sound. Joe started to cry. Angie had never been good with emotion. Her options were always to either wait it out or go away. She racked her brain to think how a normal person would behave in a Starbucks with a woman crying a few chairs away. Angie could reasonably ask the girl if she was all right. That seemed like an appropriate response. Joe's shoulders were shaking. She was clearly upset, so Angie could just say the words, "Are you okay?" It was a simple question. People asked variations of it all the time to complete strangers. In elevators, in bathrooms, in line for coffee. How are you doing? Angie opened her mouth, but it was too late. Joe stood up. She unhooked her purse from the back of her chair, or at least she tried to. The strap got caught. The chair toppled. The sound was like an explosion in the small space. Hemingway rushed over to help her. I've got it, Joe said. I know how to pick up a fucking chair. She snatched the chair from his hands. She slammed it back in place. The sound echoed like a gunshot. Head swiveled to see what the problem was. The barista started to walk around the counter.
I'm sorry, Hemingway apologized. I was just trying to help.
Help? Joe snorted. Mind your own fucking business. That's how you can help. Joe yanked open the glass door. She stalked across the parking lot. She threw her purse into her car. Her tires burned against the asphalt as she streaked out of the parking lot.
Jeesh, Hemingway said. What was that?
Angie smiled. That was her daughter. Tuesday, 10:27 a.m. Angie drove down Chattahoochee Avenue at an old lady's pace. Her transmission was slipping. She didn't have time to top off the fluid. She didn't have time to change her coffee-stained jeans. She was late meeting Dale and his electronics guy. There were a lot of things Angie didn't mind being late for, but everything had changed half an hour ago inside the Starbucks. Damn it! Angie struggled to push the gear into fourth. There was a grinding sound that sent a rattle into the clutch. Maybe she could talk Dale's guy into topping off her transmission fluid. Or maybe she would torch the car and leave it burning in front of Sarah Linton's apartment building. She was the reason Angie had to buy transmission fluid by the case. Normally, Angie would spend a few weeks with Will, let him fix the car, then head on her way, but that wasn't an option since Red Riding Hood was sleeping in her bed. His name is my favorite word, Sarah had written to her sister. Shit. Angie hissed out one of her favorite words between her teeth. She couldn't dredge up her usual anger for Sarah Linton. She was too worried about Joe. She had to watch the Starbucks video again. Her phone battery was almost gone from playing it so much. Angie kept her palms on the steering wheel and balanced her phone between her fingers. She tapped the arrow for play.
Do you see?
Joe whispered, holding up her iPhone, proving to the caller that she was inside the Starbucks.
I understand. I will. Thank you.
Before Angie made detective, she had worked as a beat cop. She took nights because they paid more. Every shift was basically 10 seconds of adrenaline, sandwiched by 8 hours of social work. The old-timers called them chicken bones, because you'd get a call to somebody's shitty apartment and find two rednecks fighting over something stupid like a chicken bone. Not that the call was ever a cakewalk.
You never knew when two neighbors arguing about a barbecue grill could turn into a standoff with a drunk pointing a loaded shotgun at your chest.
Domestic violence calls were the same, but different. You always went in assuming something really bad was going to happen. Even Angie, who was drawn to confrontation, hated rolling out on a battery call. The men always tried to push her around. The women always lied. The kids always cried.
And in the end, all Angie could do was arrest the guy, write up the report, and wait until she got another call to go to the same house over and over and over again.
Joe didn't have any obvious bruises or scars. Her face was perfect.
She walked with an even stride, not in the bent-over posture of a woman who'd gotten the hell beaten out of her.
But still, Angie could tell that her daughter was being abused, the way she never looked at her husband, the way she stayed glued to his side, never talking to anybody, never daring to raise her eyes above the floor, the way she never left home except to go to the elementary school, the grocery store, or the dry cleaner. The obedient air she assumed around her husband as if she was not a person, but an appendage. Two nights ago, when Kip was convening a meeting about Joe being a problem, Reuben Figueroa